Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL.
I always enjoy bringing you the latest. This is The Scoop.
It's The Scoop with Darren Dookie Wolfson from 5 Eyewitness News.
And away we go on this Tuesday night, the 12th of January. The year is 2021. Come April, we will celebrate 5 years of doing the Scoop podcast, although it's entirely possible at some point in the coming months between now and April that the Hubbard Broadcasting brain wizards come to their senses, kick me the heck out of this studio, and have the Scoop podcast disappear forever. But for the time being, we are still here. We are alive and kicking. I've been asked, oh, by the way, this is Scoop podcast episode 300. And 29. I've been asked for an update on the Twins. I'm hopeful to be talking with Thad Levine before the week is over. I will tell you this much. They've talked to teams. They've talked to agents. There's a good chance if you tweet me and say, hey, have the Twins checked in on so-and-so, you name the free agent? The answer is yes. But until we get to the point, I'm reiterating a lot of what I've said on previous podcasts, but until we get to the point of the Twins extending actual offers, it's hard for me to say, like, the Twins' interest is serious, but I do expect the Twins to add a starting pitcher, to add another reliever, to add a middle infielder. Like, they are not even close to done before spring training starts, whenever spring training will start. The Twins are expected to have a scout on Wednesday in Florida. Watch free agent Corey Kluber. I'm told that Thad Levine, the aforementioned Thad Levine, has remained in constant dialogue with the Kluber camp. So the expectation is the Twins will have representation to watch Kluber throw on Wednesday afternoon. I've been asked about Brad Hand, anything up with Brad, who was on this podcast a couple or a few episodes ago. So after that conversation, when Brad was on the podcast, the Twins did extend a phone call to Brad's representation to inquire, to say, hey, what is going on? Hey, we have some level of interest, but since then, nothing. So I've been asked, hey, what about Brad Hand to the Twins? Well, action would have to pick up significantly for the Twins to land Brad Hand. At this point, Wes Johnson has not talked to Brad. Rocco Baldelli has not talked to Brad. Brad is further down the road with other teams. I'll get to some other notes, maybe in a notes-only podcast later this week, or maybe I include the Thad Levine conversation. Maybe it's, you know, a little conversation, and I can empty out my figurative notebook. But I'm up against the clock a little bit. I wanted to do a podcast here on this Tuesday night to get some interviews I've done the past few days out and about. I will start with Wild General Manager Bill Guerin. I caught up with him a couple days ago. So this was before the news on Tuesday night that the Wild have extended Marcus Foligno. Heck, if you listen to Marcus, Marcus has captain written all over him. He just exudes leadership. But anyway, the Wild inked Foligno to a 3-year extension worth $9.3 million. So Foligno is now under contract with the Wild through the 2023-2024 season. So I did not ask Bill about the Foligno extension since it had not happened, but I hit him on a few other talking points. So here is my recent conversation with Wild General Manager Bill Guerin. I get it. It's early, but I'm not quite sure there is such a thing as it's early, because last time I checked, the games count for real here in just a couple days. So through the first few days of camp, what have you learned about your team?
Well, you know what? There's a lot of excitement around. I think, you know, we've got some good energy going. I think guys are happy with a lot of new faces in the locker room. you know, with the new game plan under under Dean Evason, and just some change. And I think it's exciting for the guys. And, you know, for me, it seems there's some youthful energy and a little more speed. And, like I said, there's a good feeling around here. Practices have been up tempo and positive, and a lot of good stuff going on. So we're excited for the start of the season.
On the new game plan under Dean, I mean, what will be noticeable as we're watching next Thursday, as we're watching the game against LA, what will be noticeable to us?
Well, you know, something that Dean's been, been preaching and pushing on the guys, and is a big part of the game plan and today's game in general, is pace and pace of play. And whether you're on the defensive side of the puck or the offensive side of the puck, you have to play with pace. You have to, you know, you have to backtrack, you know, when you lose the puck, and then when you transition, you have to attack with speed. And everything's just got to be done with more pace. And that's something that Dino's really focused on.
How much do you enjoy the synergy you have with Dean? I mean, how often are the two of you talking, whether it's line combinations, the power play units, the penalty kill units?
The only time I don't like it is when we're on the golf course, because Dean's a scratch golfer and he always takes money from me. But we have a great rapport. We're in constant communication. We see a lot of things the same way. Maybe it's, the era that we grew up, you know, kind of playing through the NHL and whatever, but we just see a lot of things the same way, and we believe in a lot of the same things. So, it makes it good. And Dean and, you know, the rest of the staff, we're all pretty tight and all good guys.
Complete this sentence, Bill. For this year to be a success, blank needs to happen.
Oh boy. Winning. We need to win. And that's the bottom line. We're not here to, our goal is not to make the playoffs. Our goal is not to win more. Our goal is to win a championship. And if you don't win a championship, yeah, there are positives that we're going to take out of. We'll take positives out of any year, but our goal is to win a championship. And if we don't, then it hasn't been a full success. So we need to, you know, start putting our best foot forward to winning a championship.
Speaking of positives, one seemingly is Jared getting the C on his sweater. Just how is he embracing, you know, having that role so far?
Yeah, I think it's been fantastic so far. I mean, it's I just think Jared's such a good guy. He's consistent. He's there every night. He's there for his teammates. He's somebody we can rely on. The way he worked his way up into the NHL, everything that this kid's persevered over the years, and he just epitomizes what we want the Minnesota Wild to be all about. And I think he's somebody that connects with everybody and communicates well. So I think everybody's thrilled for Jared, and we're looking forward to, seeing how he does in his first season. But he's also got a lot of help. There are also a lot of great veteran leaders around him, guys that have been around for a long time that he can really lean on. And I think for any captain, no matter what, you need a good support system to lean on.
Was it fun or was it taxing, because you had so many legitimate candidates? You mentioned, you know, the veterans he can lean on, but, you know, by name, Zach and Ryan and Marcus, like, Bill, you had so many legitimate candidates. So I'm just curious, was the process in getting to Jared to be captain, was it fun or was it taxing?
No, I mean, it wasn't taxing. I think it's something that you go about methodically, and you know, pros and cons to each guy and to what everybody brings. And, you know, the bottom line is that we have a lot of guys that bring a lot of positive things. But in the end, I think Spurge really just checked all the boxes and was somebody that we really felt comfortable, giving this honor to, and somebody that we really trust with it.
Who was in the circle where you guys came to this conclusion? Like, did you talk to Dean? Did you talk to Zach, Ryan, Marcus, other players in the locker room?
No, it was a very small circle. It was me, Dean. It was Craig Leopold. It was just a very, very small circle. And, Jared had the backing of each and every one of those people. And, it was a good decision, I think.
Zach did tell us earlier in the week that he was disappointed. Now, he wouldn't be human, right, if there wasn't some disappointment. Like, do you understand that, that some guys just are disappointed because they didn't get the C?
I think it's only human nature that, you know, you would be disappointed. But, you know, in my message to Zach and other players, we need them more than ever. And Jared needs them more than ever. And this is a time for them to step up and be more of a leader than ever, because we're in a transition period. And you know what, young guys and new guys watch them. They watch the Suitors, the Parises, the Spurgeons, the Foligno's, and they want to see how it's done here, the type of things that are going on. So we need them to be the best leaders that they've been. And, you know, because you're not wearing a C or you're not wearing an A, doesn't mean we don't rely upon you. We rely upon everybody.
Speaking of those younger guys, we captured some cool video. I think it was Tuesday of Zach and Kirill sitting on the bench together, and Zach was pointing things out, and seemingly Kirill was comprehending, I think, what Zach was telling him. But just overall on Kaprizov, just how special of a young man is he?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kirill's a great kid. He's got a great personality. He's communicating well. His English is very good. There don't seem to be any, roadblocks for him as of yet. I think, it definitely helps that he's playing with Bukestad and Parise, and that two guys that have been around for a long time, and they can help him navigate the games and navigate the life. And like I said, those are the things that we rely on our older guys for no matter what. So, hey, look, if those guys help Kirill and Kirill does well and helps our team, we're all doing well. And that's the main thing, is that the team does well.
And Nick can get him the puck. Like, you have the right centerman to get Kirill the puck?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can have the best centerman in the world, but you got to get open too. So it's a two-way street. You know, you can't just expect your centerman to do all the work for you. You have to put the effort in to get to the right spots.
Speaking of centerman, he's not a centerman, but I thought maybe Johansson would be a centerman, but he's better off at wing?
I think so, but I think he can give us games at center. He's done it in the past. I think, again, he's another guy with a lot of experience, more on the wing than center, but he can play center, and he has in this league. It's just a matter of putting guys in position to succeed. And right now, on a line with Bonino and Fiala, it's a pretty good trio.
I think this is what, year 16 for Suter. I mean, presumably one day he'll be in the Hall of Fame. How does he keep? Now he might tell us that you know, last year maybe he wasn't in the best of shape, right? Just coming off the injury the year prior. But my sense is he's in a pretty good spot right now. Like, how do you keep playing at such a high level 16 years in, I guess is the question I'm getting at.
Well, I think there's a level of professionalism that you have to get to, and Ryan does have it. I mean, he's prepared every year. It's, something where you have to work on your conditioning and your strength even more as you get older. And you have to realize that younger guys are pushing you too. It's a good spot to be in, but you also have to be more alert and more on the ball and more prepared to go. It's not easy becoming an older player in this league, especially now, but Ryan certainly has the capabilities of being a contributing player for us as we move forward.
Do you have a preference on who his partner is out there, Jared or Matt, or do you not care?
I care about winning games, and that's the bottom line. I don't care who plays with who scores what, who gets how many points. I care about winning games. And you know what? We're going to put the guys together who we feel best will give us a chance to win games, and that's the bottom line.
What stood out about Matt Boldy's just dominant performance? I mean, he was so good in the World Juniors. Presumably you watched, I'm assuming, just about every minute. Just what stood out about how good Boldy was?
Yeah, I think, Matt's developed a really strong low game in the offensive zone. You can see he's gained a lot of confidence over the last 2 years. And I mean, that was evident, but their power play was amazing. And he was a big part of that, but he's a big body. He's getting stronger. He's developed that strong low game and the ability to make plays from down low. It's a nice sign. It's he's going through the proper, you know, trajectory of development here where, you know, he started slow at Boston College and then got better the second half. And then he's picked up in the second year and then had a great World Junior. So as long as we just kind of keep moving the needle forward like that, he's looking real good.
How about Rossi in Edmonton? I mean, maybe doesn't have the, or didn't have the great supporting cast around him, but I guess what stood out when you watched Marco play?
Yeah, you know what? The good thing about it is that Marco did not have the supporting cast that Matt Boldy did, but Marco never cheated in the game. He never cheated for points. He never cheated, you know, for breakaways or things like that. He did the right thing the whole time. And to me, that shows maturity, that shows leadership. And, you know, when you're not cutting corners, even though, you know, you're getting killed in the game or whatever, it really shows a strong character. And you know, we were really proud of him.
Is the hope that he can play Sunday in the scrimmage?
Yeah, we'll see.
So day by day, I mean, it's just
day by day
quarantining.
Yeah, day by day. We're not going to push him too hard here.
And I suppose once he gets on the ice, it's still a day by day thing when you make the determination whether he stays here or heads back to Europe.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just really honestly a day by day thing, and we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We don't want to do anything. Just because we're excited, you have to do the best you can to fight your urges to just, you know, stick the kid in the lineup and force it on him. Like I've said about Kirill, this is the best league in the world. Guys don't care where you're drafted. Guys don't care how many goals you scored in the KHL. They don't care what you did last night or last year. They're going to play hard tonight, and it's the best league in the world with the best players. So we got to manage our players individually and do what's best for them.
Has it just been a crazy – so you got hired about, what, like 18 months ago, give or take, about a year and a half ago, about?
Yeah.
I mean, does it feel like I say 17 or 18 months ago, does it feel like crazy? 17 or 18 years, just everything that
– You tell me.
Yeah.
You tell me if it's been crazy.
This whole thing
has been nuts. But, hey, look, you know what? I think when things settle down, this will make me a better manager. You know what? My guys in hockey ops here have – they've kept me afloat, and you know, as a group, we've become tighter because of all the things that we've had to deal with over the last 9-10 months. And I think it just makes all of us stronger. And you know what? We're living in a new world now where we've got to be, you know, willing to roll with the punches and not expect the norm. And hey, look, adversity always makes you stronger. It's just a matter of how you attack it. And we're all coming out of this okay. And you know, we're going to be playing hockey soon. That's what we're excited about.
Bill, when you say your management skills, how would you classify the kind of manager that you are?
Well, I really believe in collaborative models. I want to include everybody that I can. You know, I want to make sure everybody has specific, clear roles. And, you know, I want to make sure people are empowered, that people feel that they have a voice, feel that they have you know, a role that they're contributing to the team every day. And there are different levels in that, you know, of that. But everybody needs to know how important they are. And, you know, I'm a big believer in that and that everybody is important. So, you know, that's kind of my style.
Is there an under the radar player that excites you or deserves some love? Like, you know, we've talked about Jared, and we've talked about Kirill, we talked about Ryan, we talked about Zach to some extent, we talked about the Bukestad line with Zach and Kirill, but is there an under the radar player, like, you know, is it Erickson Ek? Is it Greenway? Is there somebody that we haven't brought up that you think deserves some love?
You know what? I mean, to be honest with you, I believe in all our guys. I think under the radar. Yeah. You know what? Greenway, if he hits his potential, man, look out. He'll be a force. Erickson Ek, you know what? He's just starting to hit stride. He's going to be really good. You know, I had a great talk with Ryan Hartman the other day, and Ryan's a kid, you know, he's a former first round pick. I just, you know, I want these guys to expect the most out of themselves and push themselves to be the best thing, to be the best player they can be. So, you know, Victor Rask, you know what? Victor Rask, he's got great skill. He's got great hockey sense. He hasn't had a chance here. We haven't had done our job and given this kid the best opportunity. So I'm looking forward to seeing him get a better opportunity and make the most of it. He can be a big time contributor to us. And, you know, Carson Soucy, you know, newly signed and on a 3-year deal. These are guys that you know, we need to help them get to another level. And I believe they can.
How much of this year is just a blessing regardless of results? I get it. You're in a results-driven business. But, like, I just saw the Dallas Stars are shut down, right, for a little bit. Like, to me, like, just every game that you're able to play, to me, would be a blessing. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Yeah, no, I do. And it's unfortunate. That's just the type of world that we're living in right now. We've got to be extremely vigilant in what, you know, in what we do and how we take care of ourselves and how we look after each other. And, you know, to me in this crazy world right now, it's, you know, we have to, you know, so many people have lost loved ones and so many people's lives have been affected negatively by this. And we just have to, you know, look in the mirror and tell ourselves how lucky we are to be doing this and that we're healthy and appreciate what we have. And if we get to play hockey, that's a wonderful thing. And, you know, we can't waste one game.
How has the pandemic directly impacted your life?
Well, I mean, you know what, there's a lot of things that it's impacted. I mean, it's, you know, impacted our, you know, my job. It's made it much different, a lot crazier. It's impacted my children's lives more than anything because, you know, they've been taken out of their schools and they've been, you know, kind of, you know, kids their age are getting gypped of a year and a half, 2 years of college and high school and, you know, formidable years. But on the positive side of it, we've had more time with them at this stage in their life than we would have. And that's kind of the silver lining. But, you know, for us being, you know, healthy and being able to be together, we're fortunate. So there's no complaints coming out of our house.
Zuccarello is making good progress.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, we're expecting him back, you know, soon. And he's put a lot of hard work in into his rehab and, you know, his off-season training. He looks like he's in great shape. And Zuki's a big part of the room. I think guys really gravitate to him. He's a pretty funny guy and keeps things loose. And we'll be happy when he's back full time.
Yeah, I mean, he's not that far removed, right, Bill, from being a really productive player. Like what? Like as recently as 2 years ago, he was solid.
Yeah, I think what happens is, and I feel like I've been in this position before, like him, is that you spend a long time in a certain place where you've had a lot of success. And then he comes to a new team like this on a big deal and lots expected. It takes a year. It takes a year to adjust, to really figure things out, to really get to know your teammates, to know how things are going to be done. It's different. And you know what? He was on a very close team with some good friends in New York, and it takes time. So you know what? We're patient with Zuki. We know the type of player he is and the type of character guy he is. So we're, like I said, we're looking forward to getting him back and you know, seeing the player that he can be.
Last one is patient. Maybe the key word on Alex Stalock. Like is there hope that Alex can be back at some point this year?
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for. I mean, you know, Al's health is, you know, first and foremost. He's a big part of our team. I would say he's probably the most popular guy in the team. He's a good guy. He's a good teammate. You know, the guys miss him. We know that. And we just want him to be healthy and, you know, we don't want to bring him back and, you know, jeopardize anything. So when his time to come back is there, we'll do it.
Are you able to have constant contact with him? Is he okay in that regard that he can hop on the phone and talk to you guys pretty regularly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've only talked to him a couple times, but, you know, every time I've talked to him or seen him, you know, he's in good spirits. And I think there's some frustration there, which is totally natural. But, you know, no doubt when Al makes a, you know, full recovery and he's back with us at he'll be his same old happy-go-lucky self.
Wild GM Bill Guerin. He actually prefers Billy. So Wild GM Billy Guerin on Stalock. Let's just hope. I mean, I think Billy is right that Alex is about the most popular guy in that locker room. I said previously on a podcast, I'll say it again, that I do firmly believe, my sense is that there's a lot more to the story. They've announced that he's out right now with an upper body injury, but I certainly sense that there's a lot more. So my hope is that Alex can play again at some point. I don't anticipate him coming back anytime particularly soon, but it does sound like Zuccarello is making good progress. So I taped that conversation with Billy on Friday. So since then, Marco Rossi, they announced over the weekend, in case you missed it, is out indefinitely with an upper body injury. The sense is that eventually he'll head back to Europe, that they can get a look at him whenever he is okay to play, and the sense is that he will be okay to play at some point here, that they can get a little look at him, but that he won't finish the year with the Wild. The expectation is that Rossi eventually will head back to Europe. On Ryan Suter, he will be paired with Matt Dumba, and Brodin will be paired with Spurgeon. I asked about whether Billy cares about who Suter is paired with. Does he care much about line combinations, who the defensive pairings are? And he answered the question, but I wanted to advance that Suter will play with Dumba, Spurgeon will play with Brodin. All right, let's continue the hockey conversation. You know me, Mr. Hockey. I caught up with Bobby Brink earlier this week. Bobby played at Minnetonka High School. He just won gold with Team USA at the World Junior Championship up in Edmonton. The U.S., won in the semis against Finland, avenging a 2020 loss to Finland. Oh, by the way, Bobby Brink was on that team. He was young enough to be back on the U.S. World Juniors team. So he played for the U.S. in 2020 and in 2021. So he was able to avenge that loss to the Finnish a year prior. Then in the championship game, the U.S. shut out Canada. So the United States wins gold at the World Junior Championship up in Edmonton. Bobby is now a forward for the University of Denver. He was drafted a couple years ago, early second round by the Philadelphia Flyers. Presumably he'll play one day in the NHL, but he's back in Denver right now getting ready to rejoin his Pioneer teammates. I caught up with Bobby via Zoom the other day.
Bobby, as we sit here and talk, I mean, nearly a week later, is there still an emotional high? Like, have you come off the emotional high of helping the U.S. win gold?
No, still kind of riding that high. It's such a special thing that it's kind of hard to forget about, or kind of hard to come back down to earth after such a cool experience up there in Edmonton, and such like a feeling of elation after winning it.
What's life been like since you guys have won? I mean, phone just blowing up nonstop, you heading back to Denver, you know, just your teammates in Denver just asking you a ton of questions. Just take me through what the last week has been like.
Yeah, it's just my phone's been blowing up like crazy. Just kind of been spending time hanging out with the guys here. Missed them and excited to get back. Finally getting back on the ice here today. So just right now, ready to get back and focus on our games this weekend.
As you look back at the gold medal game, you guys playing so well, what worked so well? Like, how were you guys able to pretty much control that game against Canada from start to finish?
I think just the confidence we had in our group and how of a close-knit group we were. I think that we kind of believed the entire time that we were going to beat Canada, and I thought that we came into the game with such a high level of confidence and a feeling of trust in one another that we thought we had it the entire time.
This wasn't the first time you had USA across the front of your chest, but how much pride do you take, Bobby, in playing for the United States of America?
Yeah, it's such a special time that whenever you do get to do it, you wear it with a lot of pride, and it's a lot of honor that goes into it. You never know when you're going to get it to do it again. So you just try to play every game in a USA jersey like it's the last time you get to wear one.
So you were in a unique position. I don't know how many other guys were in your unique position, but you were on the 2020 World Juniors team, the team that lost to Finland. How did that experience motivate you heading into the 2021 tournament?
Yeah, we had 8 returning guys that lost in the quarters last year to Finland. So I think that as a team, we were incredibly motivated to kind of jump over that hurdle that had stopped us last year with such a good team. And so I think that we kind of had that game circled on our calendar that if we got Finland in this tournament, we were going to be ready to go. We were going to try to avenge the loss from last year.
How crazy was the Finland game? A lot of us, you know, fixate on the gold medal game, but think about that Finland game. I mean, that easily could have gone the other way pretty quickly.
Yeah, that was a tough game. They were really good. And luckily, Artie came through in the end and scored a huge goal for us there in the last couple minutes of the game when we'd just given up a few, and where it looked like we had it won, we kind of let it slip away a bit. So that was a tough game, and It kind of set us up well for kind of believing in ourselves for the gold medal game.
How cool was that moment as the clock's ticking down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I don't know if you were on the ice or on the bench, but just storming your goalie and just that particular celebration.
Yeah, it's that last like kind of 30 seconds there. You kind of know that it's kind of locked up that you won, and everyone's just waiting for that 30 seconds to get off. And then it's a race to the goalie to see who can get there first and just join the celebration as early as possible, because it's just a really cool thing that you don't always get to experience.
Was your run, you had the two goals, I think you were a +6 overall. Was your run just confirmation of all the hard work you put in over the summer? Such an atypical off season with quarantine and the pandemic that's ongoing, but just the way you played, was that confirmation of all the hard work that you put in, a lot of it on just an individual basis?
It's a really good thing going in knowing that you kind of put in a lot of work in the off season, and you kind of see it paying off in such a special high end tournament that it's kind of a confidence booster for your game back in college. You know, you can play at a high level, and you've put in a lot of work to back it up. So I think that, it's a huge confidence booster.
Knowing that you can play, Bobby, at a high level, I mean, you were on a nice run. Correct me if I'm wrong, but before things were shut down about, 10, 11 months ago, last March, like that run you had, wasn't that like a really impressive run as you guys were ramping up for the NCHC tournament?
Yeah, our team was playing really well at the time. I'd kind of felt pretty comfortable with having already like half a season of college hockey. And I think that I was kind of coming into my own there at the end and feeling really good about my game. And unluckily, COVID hit and shut us all down. But I'm just trying to carry that into this season. I thought I had a good off season. So I'm just trying to carry the momentum I built in March into the season right now.
Let's even go back. I think the last time we connected, I connected with you at that rink in Victoria. I did a pre-draft story on you. So that would have been a couple years ago, a couple summers ago. Like, how much has your game evolved since the last time I was with you?
Yeah, I think that I've matured a few years and kind of grown into my body. I've worked hard on my skating, and I think that after another couple good off seasons that my game's just kept evolving slowly, and that I think that I'm feeling even better than I did that my draft year.
Why was it so important for you to focus so much on your skating?
It was kind of a knock that I had on my game, and I think that it was a weakness that I had that I hadn't paid much attention to in the past, and I realized this summer that I kind of had to shore up that weakness and give it some special attention this summer, because it's vital for the next level.
What's the future hold? I mean, do you have any idea when Philadelphia has interest in signing you? I mean, just play out the year here in Denver and cross that bridge after the season. Just how will the next handful of months look like?
Yeah, it's kind of what you said. Just play out the rest of the season and you focus on your team here with Denver and focus on doing whatever you can to help them win a national championship. And then you kind of cross that bridge when it comes, and you don't think about it till it's kind of there right in front of you.
Is it hard not to think though about one day playing in the National Hockey League, just with all your success the last year plus, that you're that much closer to achieving your dream?
Yeah, I think that's kind of always in the back of your mind. It's a goal that I've had since I was a young kid, and it's kind of what drives you in the off season is that goal of playing in the NHL in the future and trying to be the best player you can be there. And so I think that there's always in your mind, and you're always thinking about what you can do to get to that level.
What's the dialogue like with the folks in Philadelphia? Like, you know, I think about Chuck Fletcher, used to work for the Wild. Brent Flair used to work for the Wild. So, I mean, those two guys in that Philadelphia front office have fingerprints here in Minnesota. So have you had a chance to have some pretty good dialogue with those guys?
Yeah, I talked with them a little bit. You talk more to their player development guys, and they kind of focus more on their players on their team. So we talk more with the player development team, and You kind of talk to them when it comes to the end of the year and where you're at, and then the player development guys will help you out with kind of giving you tips on what you, they think you can do better to get you to that next level.
I'll leave you after a couple more. So it was four Minnesotans total, right? And of the four, you and two others, like, have this really strong bond. Maybe Brock Faber wasn't in that mix when you guys were growing up, but two others, right? I mean, I guess take us through that part of the story, Bobby, where you four Minnesotans, three, you guys have this really strong bond.
Yeah, we grew up playing together. Brock was a year younger than us, so we didn't know him a lot going in, but Jackson, Drew, and I played each other growing up. We went to middle school together. We kind of had been, we were really close friends throughout our entire youth, and it was really cool getting to play with them, and it's nice going into a team that you don't know some of the guys and having two close friends already there. So to experience that tournament and experience winning a medal with them, it's something special, and it's lucky that it got to happen.
I mean, I suppose in your case, I mean, you were representing Minnesota, you're representing the University of Denver, and then obviously you're representing Team USA. You were wearing a lot of hats.
Yeah, you just want to represent them as best you can. You know, you're representing Minnetonka and Minnesota, and you're always representing your school. So you just want to try to make them proud and represent yourself in the best way possible to shine a good light on them.
I'll leave you with this. So your dad played for way back when the U.S. and the World Juniors, is that correct?
Yeah, he played in 94.
94, but they didn't win gold, correct?
No.
So what's it like now having bragging rights with your dad?
Yeah, it's cool. He was probably my biggest fan throughout the whole thing, so I don't want to rub it into his face at all. I think that he's always had my back, and he's always helped me through kind of the tournaments and my hockey life. So I think that it was kind of a special moment. I got to call him after the game, and it was pretty cool. So, yeah, it was a I wouldn't say it's bragging rights. I just say more that it's just a cool thing to have in your bag, though.
I mean, is he a big reason why you're as humble as you are, Bobby? I mean, the times we've had a chance to talk, you come across as incredibly humble.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing that my dad's instilled in me my entire life. I think that it's an important thing to have, and one that he's always tried to teach me. And so I think that he's kind of a big reason that I feel I have kind of some of the character traits that I have today.
Bobby, thank you for doing this. I could talk to you for a while, but I'm sure you've been inundated with requests. I know you've done a lot of these, so I appreciate you carving out some time for me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Easy kid to root for. Former Minnetonka High School forward, Bobby Brink. All right, let's transition now to football. Another good kid, an easy kid to root for, is former Gophers cornerback Ben St. Juiced. So he made the decision to go pro. A lot of Gophers said, hey, free year here in 2020. I'm coming back for the 2021 season. Connor Olson, Sam Schluter, Coney Durr, Seth Green. So a lot of guys decided, hey, I'm coming back. Ben is the one who said, nah, it's time for me to go pro. I caught up with Ben St. Juiced.
Easy or tough decision? I mean, certainly if you wanted to play yet another year of college football, the opportunity was there. A lot of your teammates, right? I mean, Coney Durr, you know, Connor Olson, Sam Schluter, Seth Green, they're all coming back in 2021. But in your situation, was it an easy or tough decision to say, you know what, that's great, but it's time for me to pursue pro football?
It was definitely not a decision that was taken fast or like last minute. It was a decision that I took. I had time to, like, you know, let marinate, like we say, or I had a lot of time to think on it during the off season, even before, you know, the season got resumed. You know, it was already canceled, so it was already an option to maybe not play or whatever. But I really, really wanted to play, you know, my senior year with my teammates and, you know, play a little bit of games and all that stuff. But yeah, I've been thinking about it for a couple months, and personally for me, for my situation, you know, at my age, and also I just graduated, got my master's, you know, I had to sign up for another master at school and all that stuff. It just felt like it was a perfect transition to go pro and start, you know, my career there. And yeah, that's why I took the decision.
So what'd you end up getting your master's in? So you got your undergraduate degree when you were at Michigan, right? And then you got your master's here at Minnesota?
Yeah, I got in sports management.
Yeah. Nice. So yeah. The hope is hopefully you have a lengthy professional football career. Then after that, pursue something in terms of, you know, whether it's being an agent or something in sports management.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no doubt.
So, okay. So you're in Atlanta right now. Is that the plan to be down there to train?
I'm in Atlanta for 3 weeks before the All-Star game in end of January. So I'll be training there. I had a specific request for a positional coach and training spot there for 3 weeks. And then after that, I'll be moving to Los Angeles, where I'll be training, where my agency is based off.
Do you have any sense whatsoever if there will be a combine, if there will be a Minnesota Pro Day, when you'll be able to perform for scouts?
Well, it looks like the Senior Bowl and other types of bowl are happening. They're making it work with new restrictions and stuff like that. So hopefully the combine will work. Will happen. Pro days in end of March, April. So hopefully by then, you know, we got things figured out and, you know, things are under control, so we can have a pro day. That would be really good for me to have a pro day.
And did you mention that there is some game you're playing in here at the end of January? Did you say that?
Yeah, I received a handful of invites to a couple of bowls, not bowls, but All-Star games and stuff like that. Still waiting to see if I'll receive a Senior Bowl invite, but I got a Hula Bowl invite. They're thinking about maybe relocating somewhere else since Hawaii has some COVID restrictions, so they're trying to play it maybe somewhere else. But as of right now, these two are active.
Ben, how does your game translate to the National Football League level?
I mean, I'm a standoff corner, you know. I'm in my class, you won't see a corner like me at 6'3", 200 pounds, that can move quick, that can move his hips, that can jam receiver at the line. I feel like I fit into the new mold of DB, you know, when you have bigger receivers and, you know, something like a DK Metcalf and all that stuff with a red zone threat, you know, where corners usually are a little bit smaller in older generation. I'm the new generation of corners. So I feel like I would fit in a lot of defenses. I can play, you know, other position or other packages and stuff like that because of my length and my stature. So I feel like I'll fit in very well.
Are there any current NFL cornerbacks that you feel like you're comparable to, or who are some NFL cornerbacks that you watch, whether it's on YouTube or cut-ups of, that you admire, that you try to pattern your game after?
Yeah, so as a kid growing up, I've always been a big fan of Darrell Revis' technique, but obviously we were very different in body shape, so I always was a big Richard Sherman guy. More recent, Xavier Howard for the Miami Dolphins just got, you know, the leading the NFL in interception with a 10. I mean, his game is unbelievable. It's crazy. So I watched those three guys.
On your senior year, just how crazy was it? I mean, we didn't think there'd be a season. Then there's a season. Then you guys were shut down for a couple of weeks. I think it was reported that you battled COVID yourself. Just how crazy was your senior season?
Hey, it wasn't what we expected. It wasn't. It was a roller coaster of emotion, just, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally. You know, from games being canceled, from COVID testing every day, me having COVID, having quarantine, missing games, and no fans in the stand. It was a different kind of environment and atmosphere, but I'm still glad that I had the chance to, you know, play the handful of games I had to I could play with my coaches and my teammates, because that, I mean, college ball is one of the best experiences you can have. So regardless if it was COVID or not, I'm grateful that I was able to play with them. But it was definitely not the easiest. It was definitely challenging physically and mentally this year.
Are you completely okay now? Even though it was multiple weeks ago, I mean, in terms of COVID, I mean, everything you need to do physically, there are no hurdles or anything?
No, I mean, the Big Ten did a great job of, I don't know about the conferences, but in the Big Ten, you can't, it's not just you have a quarantine of 10 days and then you go back to play. You have a quarantine of 10 days. You have cardiac and heart tests and respiratory tests at the hospital, like a handful of tests before you go back. They have to make sure that, like, you know, like you're not going to be in danger when you go back to the field. So I did all that stuff and passed, and I was fine coming back. So, I mean, obviously there's long-term effects that we don't know and all that stuff, but I've been fine ever since.
Your decision to come here to Minnesota, in hindsight, about the best decision you could have made?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It changed my life on and off the field. I mean, off the field, I mean, I was able to get a degree from one of a great school in America. And on the field, I was able to experience one of the greatest seasons in Minnesota history last year. And just this year, playing with my teammates and Coach Fleck, really great coach, great culture in Minnesota, and really, like, opened up my eyes to be a better player and a better man.
I mean, as you reflect upon that run in 2019, I mean, mm-hmm. just how much fun was that with the capping off of the bowl win over Auburn?
It was fun because we knew how much work we put in. We knew how much doubt there was from outside, but we always believed in ourselves from week one. You know, the tight, tough games that we had, the first three, you know, it built our character, built our team to be able to beat Auburn in the bowl game when it was tough and it was tight, because maybe they didn't go through the same adversity that we went through. But, you know, I mean, we were, what, like 4 points away from going to the Rose Bowl, and then the Iowa game, you know, we didn't, you know, back down. We came back, you know, won that bowl game, won the first bowl game. Actually, it's funny, like, it means a lot to me because my freshman year at Michigan, I went to the Outback Bowl and then I lost to South Carolina, and I came back with the Gophers and won against Auburn. So it was my first bowl game in my whole college career.
Are you now row the boat forever? That everything, the culture that PJ Fleck, you know, put into place here, that you're all aboard and fully on board with what PJ's trying to accomplish here for the next handful of years?
Oh, yeah. It's only a handful. Only the people inside the culture will really understand how this culture is not just a slogan or just, like, you know, just for fun that we do it. Like, it's a lifestyle, from the community service that we do, from giving back to the community, from taking care of your teammate, coaches, the relationship and all that stuff. Like, it's just stuff, like, I mean, it has the rollerball slogan, but it's just stuff that you can carry on with your life and just be a better person in general in society.
I mean, is it safe to say, I mean, even to use the cliche, like, maybe you went from a boy to a man here at Minnesota, or how much did you grow up just learning about life the last couple of years?
A lot. Like I said, I mean, I started doing things outside of football that I didn't really used to do, and involving myself in society, giving back to community, really, really, really digging in my school stuff to, like, be the best student I can be, best player on the field. I mean, you heard this summer, like, I even started an organization with one of my older teammates for student athlete rights and, you know, activism and stuff like that. Those are things that's, you know, teammates like Seth Green and Rashad Bateman and all that stuff, we all, like, you know, brainstorm together because they're in the same culture of, you know, doing the right thing in society.
I mean, that's another just, I mean, you think about just everything that was on your plate in the year 2020. I mean, just how were you able to handle everything?
Like I said, it wasn't the easiest. It wasn't the easiest. I had to be mentally strong to handle everything on and off the field, from the racial injustice that we had in the summer with George Floyd to the pandemic to football and all that stuff. So this is where you see how strong and how valuable a culture is, because a lot of people might have quit, whatever, but we have great support system with Coach Fleck and all the other coaches in the university. So
what was your reaction? I mean, over the last handful of days, the police officers in Wisconsin are not being charged. There's a lot of people, and I hear them loud and clear that feel like if it wasn't, you know, if it was Black people charging the Capitol yesterday, that all heck would have broken loose, that Caucasians were able to just walk out after charging into the Capitol, just, you know, even after, you're right. I mean, the unrest here in May, unfortunately, Ben, I don't know. I mean, you tell me, just, I don't know how much has really changed in the last handful of months.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to take weeks or months or maybe a year. It's going to take a lot of time to change. Now that basically what happened this year is that it got exposed, you know, it was secretly happening, you know, the discrimination, injustice, the violence, the police brutality. It's just that we didn't see it, like, fully on all social media platform and TV. Now it got exposed this year. Now everybody knows that it's happening. So now what we're going to do about it? Now we need to take steps to take actions, maybe new laws, new structures, new systems, stuff like that. Obviously, it's not going to change. I mean, we saw what happened on TV. It's not going to change overnight. But now we need to look forward to what we can do, what we can install as a plan to fix those things.
I mean, certainly going back to the November election, right? Not just on the national level with President-elect Biden, you know, about to take office here on the 20th, but you think about all the local elections. I mean, there is something to be said about all the seats that changed. You know, now the Democrats, you know, having control of the Senate and the House. So, you know, I guess you can say everything going back to May and George Floyd and any number of other instances, what took place in Louisville, that there was a direct impact on the November elections.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's certain politicians like people in place that had power that took notice of what happened. And but it's not really, in my opinion, it's not really a Republican or Democrat thing. It's just making sure that like we, it doesn't become a trend. You know, we stay on track, you know, like next year or in 2 years or in 3 years, will we still remember George Floyd or Breonna Taylor or what happened and all that stuff? Will it still be in the agenda that it was pushed, you know, like vote for this person because they're going to take care of this, or vote for this person, they're going to take care of this. We have to remind those people in high places like that has power that, hey, you said this was going to happen, that we're going to change this. Let's make sure that it happens, you know, because it doesn't really matter if it's Democrat or Republican. If there's no change, there's no change.
How grateful are you for the leadership at the University of Minnesota, PJ Fleck specifically, that he and others didn't run from these sorts of conversations, that he was there, they were there to help you in any way, to certainly converse and talk about these topics?
I mean, it tells me everything about the man and his character and his identity. I mean, he probably doesn't even know like what half of his team, like as African-American, like black people go through, because he's a white middle-aged man. I mean, 30 some, I don't want to tell him he's too old, but he's the older white man. I mean, and he stepped up for us and he spoke for us and he gave us a voice and he supported us and all that stuff. So he tells me everything that I need to know about his character and who he is, because he didn't shy away from the media because it happened and on camp, like close to campus in Minneapolis. He gave us a voice, he gave us opportunity to protest and say what we wanted. So he did everything that he could do as a U.S. citizen, as a football coach, to give us all the voice and let us be heard.
Do you think he could make it work in the NFL? There was a report, I don't know, like a week ago from the NFL Network that at least one team has PJ on its radar. We don't know if PJ will ultimately interview for any jobs, but do you think if he did and got hired, do you think he could be an NFL coach?
He could be a coach anywhere, to be honest. He's just a great coach overall. But on the other hand is that his culture is very specific, and it takes some time. I mean, I wasn't there the first couple of years at Minnesota, but his culture is so profound and goes in depth and just in life, like we talked about earlier, that you're not going to just come to a football team and put that culture in 1 year. It takes maybe a couple more years and a little bit more time. So if he does end up going to the NFL, it'll be a specific team where, you know, players know a little bit of the culture and they can fit in very well. Because I mean, same thing with college. You can't just go to any team and put your culture. Maybe some players will push back the culture. But he's just a great coach overall. He'll be successful wherever you go.
The 2021 Gophers, I mean, PJ shouldn't go anywhere. I mean, the 2021 Gophers with so many guys back, I mean, safe to say the 2021 Gophers should be pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, this year it was the year after, like, leaving all the seniors that went to the NFL and all that stuff. There was a lot of doubt and all that stuff. Obviously, we knew about it, but it wasn't really an excuse or anything. Like, we saw the talent that we had. It was just that we were young in the year that we had with COVID and all that stuff. It was a little bit harder to install the plays and fit all the guys in the culture. But this year, like in 2021, I mean, all the guys are coming back, from like Tanner, Chris Almond-Bell, Coney, all the defensive line being back and all that stuff. The team is going to be really good, to be honest. Like, they're going to be really good.
Do you lean on, I'll let you go after this, do you lean on some of those guys from the 2019 team that ended up getting drafted. You see Antoine Winfield Jr. doing really well with the Buccaneers. I just saw that Chris Williamson signed a futures deal with the Atlanta Falcons. Do you keep in touch with Antoine and Chris?
Yeah, always. I mean, I try to learn as much as I could my first year with Antoine, playing with him. We still connect on social media, asking questions about the training and all that stuff and how he's doing. He's just a great guy overall. And Chris is one of my good friends, too. We always chat, check on him, and he check up on me and all that stuff. I mean, we only played 1 year, but the year that we had was so spectacular that, like, you know what I'm saying, we're, like, friends, you know what I'm saying, friends for a long time.
And you're just doing a lot of combine training right now. I mean, is the key, Ben, that whether it's right or wrong, the scouts want to see your 40 time, right? Like, if you run an electric 40 time, that vaults you up. Unfortunately, sometimes the tape doesn't tell the whole story, that if you kick some serious butt in the 40, or you name the combine, you know, athletic drill, that can vault you up a draft board. So is it all about combine training right now?
I mean, right now, that's what I'm focused on, you know, making sure that my craft, my technique is as perfect as it can be for the pro day or combine and all that stuff. Obviously, at my size, like you said, they're going to be looking at my 40. So I've been working heavily on that, strength training and speed training to run a fast 40. I'm pretty sure I'm going to run a pretty good 40. So that's going to be good for a 6'3", 200-pound corner.
What was the last time that you were clocked in at the 40?
Ooh, I would say, like, I don't really know, because we didn't have it this year with COVID. So I would say maybe last year or 2 years ago, whatever. So,
yeah. I mean, in the what, 4.5, 4.6, 4.7, 4.8 range?
I would say in the 4.4, 4.5. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I mean, for your size, I mean, that if you hit that number, Ben, I would think at your size, I mean, that's the meal ticket.
Yeah, I'm a big strider. So once I get my start, my 10-yard split worked on, you know, with the training, the trainers here and all that stuff. After that, once I get up and I start striding, like, I'm a really fast guy. So,
Ben, thank you for doing this. This was fun. I appreciate getting to know you. Happy New Year, and I'll certainly follow your happenings here in the coming weeks and months.
All right, thank you very much.
Former Gophers cornerback, he transferred from Michigan, played a lot in 2019 and a lot in 2020, a starter, Ben St. Juste. Even minus St. Juste, the 2021 Gophers absolutely should be rock solid. Like, I personally think running back Mo Ibrahim should have gone pro, but my understanding is, like, he didn't even come close. Like, he is all in on Row the Boat. Mo loves PJ Fleck, loves the culture. Like, I'm told Mo didn't even think, like, for 5 minutes about going pro. Like, he was always coming back in 2021. Then I mentioned the offensive lineman coming back. Coney Durr, really good cornerback, is back. Then even in the last 2 days, the Gophers pick up a transfer kicker from Temple. Then they picked up a defensive tackle, Niles Pinckney, from Clemson. I was actually DMing with him on Instagram. I'll connect with him on a Zoom in the coming days. He was third team all ACC in 2019, just what, a week or two ago, against Ohio State in the college football semifinals. He had three tackles, played a lot of snaps for Clemson going back 4 years, was a four-star recruit coming out of high school. I mean, all I need to say is third team all ACC 2 years ago at Clemson, the Clemson Tigers. Like, Pinckney is going to come in here and absolutely influence the interior of the Gophers defensive line here in 2021. Gophers and Ohio State open the season in early September. All right, we are done. This has been Scoop Podcast episode 329 on this Tuesday night, the 12th of January. Always appreciate you listening. Stay safe, stay sane.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters. Because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but If you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.